Welcome back. In this lesson, we're exploring Introduction to Generative AI Tools. If you've watched the overview, this will build on that. If not, you'll still be able to follow along. Now, let's go further by exploring practical examples, future workplace relevance, responsible use, and how you can build confidence with this skill.
Yeah, and I think that mission, moving from just, you know, knowing about this stuff to actually mastering it, is so critical right now. I mean, we're talking about preparing for a totally digitally enabled future.
Right, because this technology is, it's basically everywhere now. Education, business, software development, you name it.
Exactly. But the challenge for anyone trying to navigate this shift is that the user interface of generative AI is, well, it's deceptively simple.
Oh, for sure. You just open the app and it's
just a blinking cursor.
Right.
In an empty text box. And for like the last 20 years, a text box basically meant one of two things, right? A search engine or a command line.
Yeah. You type something in, you hit enter.
Right, but both of those are deterministic systems. You put in a specific query, and the system retrieves a specific pre-programmed piece of data.
Right, it goes and finds a file.
Exactly. But generative AI requires this this fundamental unlearning of that muscle memory, because it operates on a probabilistic model, not a deterministic one.
Okay, let's unpack that. Because I think that shift from deterministic to probabilistic computing is like the invisible hurdle for most people.
Oh, absolutely. It's huge.
Like, I like to think of traditional computing as a hyper-obedient calculator. You press the number 4, it'll always output the number 4. It's just a retrieval mechanism.
Right.
It's completely predictable.
But generative AI, on the other hand, isn't going into a database and retrieving a file. It's synthesizing novel outputs in real time, right?
Yes, exactly. It is basically calculating the probability of which word or, you know, which pixel or line of code should logically follow the previous one.
Mm.
And it does that based on the billions of data points it absorbed during its training phase. Which means we're dealing with systems that create entirely new text, images, code, just by mapping these semantic relationships.
Right, because the training data isn't stored as like a library of facts. It's stored as this massive, multidimensional map of concepts.
Oh, wow, a map of concepts.
Yeah, so when you ask it to generate, say, a strategic marketing plan, it isn't pulling up some saved template. It's actually navigating that mathematical space.
It's finding the relationship between the concepts.
Exactly. It finds the vector relationships between the concepts of strategy and marketing and whatever specific industry you mentioned. And then it generates a sequence of words that statistically represents that intersection.
That is so wild to think about. To contextualize it for you, the listener, it helps to change how you picture the machine. Instead of a librarian fetching a book for you,
which is the search engine mindset.
Right. Instead, think of it as a highly trained sous chef in a massive commercial kitchen. But this sous chef hasn't actually memorized a single recipe.
Okay, I like this analogy.
Right. Instead, they've internalized the molecular chemistry of literally every ingredient on Earth. They understand the exact mathematical relationship between the acidity of a lemon, the richness of butter, and, you know, the texture of a specific protein.
Wow, yeah. So they understand the underlying principles.
Exactly. So if you ask for a dish that balances those profiles, they don't look up a recipe card. They synthesize a brand new dish on the spot, based on that deep understanding.
That is a brilliant way to look at it. But, you know, the limitation of that sous chef is that their output depends entirely on the parameters you set as the head chef.
Ah, right. If you give bad instructions.
Yeah. If you provide vague instructions, the sous chef just has to rely on generic statistical averages. You say, make me soup, you might get a perfectly edible but utterly boring bowl of soup.
A very mathematically average soup.
Exactly. The mechanism of synthesis requires constraints to actually produce high-value output. And in the context of generative AI, those constraints are your prompts.
Which brings us perfectly to the mechanics of prompt engineering. Because I feel like the common advice out there is just, oh, write clear and specific prompts.
Yeah, which is true, but it kind of misses the point.
Right. Because that treats the AI like a human employee who just needs better directions.
Right.
But technically speaking, a prompt is a mechanism for narrowing that probability space you were talking about earlier.
Exactly. When people experience poor results, it is usually because they are engaging in what we call zero-shot prompting, but with overly broad parameters.
Wait, explain zero-shot prompting real quick.
It just means you type one sentence, give it zero examples of what you want, and expect a masterpiece.
Which is that search engine mindset we talked about.
Completely. And it sabotages the whole generative process because the system is probabilistic. Giving it a single brief prompt just leaves way too much mathematical room for generic token prediction.
So how do we fix that? What's the advanced move?
Well, you need to use techniques like few-shot prompting. That's where you provide the model with, say, 3 or 4 examples of the exact output you want before you even ask it to execute the task.
Oh, interesting. So you're showing it the pattern first.
Right. Those examples act like gravitational anchors in the model's brain. They forcefully pull its predictions away from the boring generic average and toward the specific tone or format you actually need.
That makes a lot of sense. And another powerful constraint is chain of thought prompting, right?
Yes. That one is crucial.
Instead of just asking for a final answer, especially if it's like logic or analysis, you literally instruct the model to think step by step.
Exactly. And the reason that works is fascinating. By forcing the AI to generate the intermediate steps of a problem out loud, you are actually creating a new context window in real time.
Wait, really? It uses its own output?
Yeah, it uses its own generated logical steps as the immediate context for its final answer. It essentially builds a tighter probabilistic corridor for itself.
Which drastically reduces the chances of it just derailing into total nonsense.
Exactly. And this iterative refinement, this kind of continuous conversational steering, is where the real leverage is. You don't just prompt once and walk away.
Right. It's a negotiation.
Yes. You provide an initial prompt, analyze the output, and then you apply more constraints. You tell it to adjust a tone, or maybe examine the counterargument to its own premise.
So it isn't just about tweaking a rough draft. It's a completely new methodology for optimizing workflows.
It really is. And we are seeing this transition happen so fast in both academic and corporate settings.
Let's actually look at a concrete scenario from the lesson materials. There's a really good case study of a student who significantly improved their study efficiency.
Oh, yeah, the student with the lecture notes.
Right. And what's key here is they avoided the trap of just having the AI do the work for them. They didn't ask it to write their essay.
Because that defeats the purpose of learning.
Exactly. Instead, they fed in their raw lecture notes and used the AI to synthesize them. Then they asked it to generate targeted revision questions based exclusively on those notes.
Right. They essentially used the AI as a cognitive organization engine.
A cognitive organization engine. I love that phrasing.
Well, it's what it is. And the architecture of that exact workflow translates seamlessly into the future workplace. I mean, the inputs change, but the cognitive mechanics are identical.
How so? Like, paint a picture of that in a corporate setting.
Sure. So instead of a student with geology notes, imagine a young professional. They aren't feeding in notes. They are feeding in, like, 45 pages of unstructured client feedback, maybe a messy transcript of a cross-departmental meeting, and a competitor's quarterly report.
Oh, man. Just a mountain of text.
Exactly. And they use the AI to synthesize all those disparate data streams into a coherent executive summary. And then they prompt the system to generate the most likely critical questions that stakeholders will ask during the project review.
That is incredibly efficient. But, you know, this introduces a pretty profound cognitive dilemma for us.
How do you mean?
Well, when we use AI to summarize all this dense, complex information, we are effectively removing the friction of reading and organizing that data ourselves.
Right.
But friction is often the very mechanism by which we humans learn and internalize complex concepts. So the question is, are we simply accelerating our workflows at the cost of our own deep comprehension?
That is the million-dollar question.
I mean, if the machine reads the 45-page report and hands you a 1-page summary, you haven't actually understood the report. You've only consumed the summary.
And that right there is the critical threshold between active and passive use.
Passive use being just accepting the summary.
Exactly. Blindly generating and accepting summaries will absolutely degrade your comprehension. If you do that, you become nothing more than a highly efficient router of synthetic data.
Just passing emails along.
Right. But active use shifts where the cognitive friction happens. You offload the rote, tedious labor of the initial data organization, sure. But then you redirect your mental energy toward high-level evaluation and synthesis.
So you transition from being the creator of the first draft to the critical director of the final product.
Perfectly said. But that only works if you actually evaluate the AI's output with rigorous scrutiny.
Which naturally brings us to the systemic risks of relying on these probabilistic systems. If you're going to be the director, you have to be acutely aware of the technology's fallibility.
You really do.
Because, like we said earlier, the system is designed to predict the most likely next word. It prioritizes linguistic plausibility over factual accuracy.
Yes, it does not possess an internal model of objective truth. It just knows what words normally go together.
Which means it will confidently generate a fictitious legal precedent or invent a historical event.
Right.
Simply because the vocabulary structurally fits your prompt.
Right, which is often referred to as a hallucination. And this is the central challenge of responsible AI use.
So what's the rule here?
The absolute mandatory rule is that all AI-generated information must be verified against external authoritative sources.
No exceptions.
None. The AI is a powerful support tool, but human judgment remains the non-negotiable backstop. Because when these systems spit out a response with such high linguistic confidence, humans are incredibly susceptible to trusting them blindly.
It's so true. We see this psychological trap in other fields all the time. It's known as automation bias.
Oh, like with GPS systems?
Yeah, or think about commercial aviation. Modern aircraft are heavily automated, right? And the autopilot's usually flawless.
Sure.
But there are documented incidents where, say, a single sensor freezes. It feeds bad data to the autopilot, and the plane suddenly begins to drift.
Oh, wow.
And the human pilot, sitting in this highly advanced cockpit with screens telling him everything is totally fine, sometimes fail to look at the artificial horizon. They don't recognize the physical orientation of the aircraft until it's too late.
Because they trust the dashboard over their own situational awareness? That is a terrifying but very accurate analogy. And the exact same bias applies to generative AI workflows.
Right, if you use it to summarize a critical project meeting.
You cannot outsource your professional accountability to the algorithm. You just can't. You must retain enough domain expertise to recognize when the AI has completely misinterpreted a nuance in the transcript.
Or when it hallucinates a consensus that didn't actually happen in the room.
Exactly. You are the pilot. The AI is the autopilot. You have to maintain situational awareness of the data.
Which poses the core reflection question from our lesson today. And this is something you, the listener, should continually ask yourself as you integrate these tools into your daily routine. How can I use generative AI tools to improve learning and productivity without becoming overly dependent on them?
It's a delicate balance, and building that resilience, that ability to leverage the tool without surrendering your own critical faculties, requires deliberate practice.
It's not something you just naturally have.
No, not at all. It requires stepping out of the theoretical understanding and actively testing the boundaries of these tools.
But what's the practical advice for someone listening today?
The practical growth step is to select one of the major generative AI tools out there right now, whether that's ChatGPT, Claude AI, or Google Gemini, and subject it to controlled experimentation.
And that experimentation shouldn't just be, you know, asking it to write a polite email to your boss.
No, no, you need to actively red team the system.
I love that term, red teaming.
Yeah. Give it a complex analytical task and then deliberately try to break its logic. Ask it to argue a specific strategic position based on a set of facts.
Okay.
And then in your very next prompt, instruct the AI to brutally critique its own argument and highlight the logical fallacies it literally just used.
Oh, that is brilliant. Force it to argue against itself.
Exactly. That kind of adversarial prompting serves a dual purpose. First, it forces you to actively evaluate the output, which maintains that essential cognitive friction we were talking about earlier.
Because you're actively dissecting the machine's logic, which actually deepens your own understanding of the topic.
Precisely. And second, it rapidly builds your intuitive sense of the system's limitations. You start to physically see where the AI excels at pattern recognition and where its probabilistic reasoning just completely falls apart.
You literally learn where the autopilot is likely to drift.
Yes. And this evaluation step is where true digital confidence is forged. It neutralizes the fear of the unknown, but it also prevents the complacency of automation bias.
You discover exactly how much context you need to load into the prompt to get a usable result.
Right, and you realize exactly how much human editing is required to turn a synthetic draft into actual professional-grade work.
Ultimately, preparing for a digitally enabled future is not about capitulating to technology. It really isn't. It is about intentionally designing workflows that blend your human judgment, your ethical accountability, and your critical thinking with the machine's unprecedented ability to synthesize massive data sets.
Could not have said it better. When you master that integration, you aren't just adopting a new piece of software. You are fundamentally upgrading your own capacity to process information.
The value of the human in the loop is no longer about raw data processing. It's about wisdom, it's about direction, and it's about verification.
Absolutely.
So as we wrap up this deep dive, I encourage you to maintain that critical posture. Stay curious, responsible, and future ready. Make sure to review the end of module study guide and complete the workbook activities to really translate these concepts into tangible habits.
And for those looking to deepen their understanding of the theoretical, ethical, and architectural foundations of everything we've explored today, our recommended academic references offer exceptional insight.
They really do.
I highly encourage you to seek out the titles Co-Intelligence, The Age of AI, and Human Compatible. They provide the necessary overarching context for how this technology is completely restructuring human-computer interaction.
They're essential reading for anyone serious about this field. Well, thank you for joining us and for bringing your focus to such a complex and rapidly evolving topic.
Thank you. The landscape will definitely continue to shift, but the foundational skills of critical synthesis and evaluation will only become more valuable.
So, the next time you face that blinking cursor in an empty text box, remember that you aren't submitting a search query. You are directing a highly capable probabilistic engine. Set your constraints, demand rigorous outputs, and never let go of the controls. We'll see you next time.